Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to I Am Resistance and the End Times. Is dedicated to creating a culture of resistance to industrial civilization, resistance to the evisceration of the living world, the land base, and the exploitation of all creatures by the corporatocracy and oligarchy that enslaves and deforms our minds, resistance to this insane culture of occupation that supports violence and oppression at every turn. We seek truth in a culture of lies, violence, and kitsch. This is a call to action of those who will listen. A call to unite to stop this toxic culture before it is too late. We must defend and restore the land base before it is uninhabitable. We must work to end exploitation of all life and learn to live as awake living beings in tune with life, connected with the forbidden. Our only hope is for the future of the living world is to resist this insane culture. It must be stopped. Rebellion is the only way. Radical feminism is the guide for all who want to dismantle, not reform, the domination cultures. Industrial civilization can be dismantled and never allowed to be again. We must build a culture of resistance to fight the insanity of industrial civilization. We must fight. Support resistance wherever you see it. Support it within yourself. Open your mind and see it. We must recognize reality. We must recognize the reality that we're in. We must see the truth. Hi, everyone. I hope you're all well, my fellow slaves, Romans, countrymen. Lend me your ears. Today is February 19th. Happy birthday, little one. What's been on my mind as I watch the distraction of the media and people reacting to El Presidente is why do we follow industrial civilization? Well, there's, of course, a litany of explanations and reasons, and I've talked about them periodically throughout the talks I give. I talk to many people off and on throughout the world, I guess. I don't know. Who wants to talk? Who's open to talking? Do we need to talk? I don't know. We're all disconnected. That's, I think, the number one thing. Disconnection. And I think that disconnection keeps us isolated in the individual, in our sense of self, and there we'll sit trying to make sense of things. Holy cow, I have a caller. I think I know who this is. Let me see if I can make this work. Okay. Hello?
Hey, it's Rhea here.
I knew it. How are you?
I've been warning you.
It's so good for you to join me.
I wasn't tuning into your shows before this, so I don't know what you were talking about. Did I interrupt anything important?
You know, I was just doing my rant. I was talking about, you know, and I think it lends to something, you know, why do we follow? I think it's just popped into my head, you know, as the media, you know, goes crazy about, you know, what our wonderful president is doing and how we're all sort of just distracted by all heck breaking loose. And the question that always kind of pops into my mind of what keeps this going? What keeps industrial civilization chugging along? What keeps the people following so readily? And that's kind of just what I was mouthing off about, kind of like
that might tie into a little bit about what I've been thinking about this morning, and that is, you know, like shows like yours and the people who open their eyes to this. It's really important that we have each other and we're supporting each other. But it's to what extent is it preaching to the choir, and to what extent do we have some kind of an obligation to bring the message to the people?
Mm-hmm.
The reason
Absolutely.
I was thinking of this is because it's such, you know, it can be such a depressing thing to come to terms with when you open your eyes to the reality of civilization and all the harm that it's doing, and then when you start projecting forward, you know, where we're going to end up, especially if you have children. And then, I don't know, do we have an obligation to bring this message to people, to be more confrontational about it, to put it in other forums than just to each other? And I know it's important that we're there for each other and that we keep this network strong and build it. And the reason
Absolutely.
I was thinking about...
Yeah.
Go on.
No, you go ahead.
The reason I was thinking about this is because yesterday I was with my sister celebrating my birthday. And she's
Happy
one of
birthday.
Those people who... I know, thank you. She's one of those people who lives in her bubble, and she, you know, chooses mm-hmm. happiness and a peaceful path, and it's so good to be around her because it's almost like I can live a little bit of a delusional life of happiness for a bit. It's like contagious. But then, you know, there's this thing about my whole life I've been silenced with my thinking and my feelings, my philosophy about the world, and you know, for most of my life, I kept it to myself. I silenced myself. And so I've made a decision in my life that I'm not going to be so silenced anymore. So yesterday, I made a couple comments that were, I guess you could say, anti-civ. And I didn't mean to bring her down. But this morning, I got a message from her basically that she's depressed. And she's, you know, I feel like I might have brought it upon her, but then, you know, to what extent is it my obligation to bring it upon other people?
Now, I think, you know, I know exactly how you feel. I live that all day, every day in a lot of ways where, well, yes, and for listeners, this is Rhea. She's awesome. I've talked to her on Facebook many times, so they're like, it's all two of them that will ever listen. But no, I mean, that's the whole point is when we kind of have those realizations and we sort of process it for ourselves to say, okay, I see what the thinkers or what some challenged the foundations, the roots of how we're living, and this incredible disconnection. And then when we see our insights ourselves, we're like, oh my God, I have some insight here that I want to share too. And it's so... We see the reactions that we get And that's the, I'm with you in that sense, that I feel that strong need to go out and be that insurgent and you know, be the caller that says, all of us, that says, hey, come on, we need to pay attention here to what's going on. And you're not going to like what you see. But even though you don't like what you see, you have to see it. It's no different than the German people having to see what was going on during World War II with the Holocaust. They have to see this. It's like, well, that's really depressing, you know, that we're rounding people up and murdering them. You're like, well, yeah, that's very depressing. But it's also what's happening. You know, it's that what happening. We can't follow this. We can't go along with this and pretend that our hands aren't dirty. And it's that call to say, hey, we have to awaken ourselves. It's too late already in many people's minds, but we can talk to each other, which is great, because you're right, we really need that support, because we're being targeted now more so, I think. We're seeing more and more extremely hostile, combative discourse that is very much designed to create such incredible divide and distraction from what, and, you know, while the industrial civilization chugs on, you know, destroying the living world, keeping people ever greater disconnected in these identities and, you know, am I this, that, or the other thing? And it's just like, okay, well, El Presidente, I like to call him, you know, is keeping people distracted while the oligarchy continues without any. No, I mean, they're not even slowing down. They're speeding up the destruction of the living world. You know, the hydraulic fracturing, the pipeline, all these things keep going and going. And, you know, we all just want to run to court. And you're like, well. and that's the whole thing. What I call what your sister, I've experienced it many times, I call it the serenity shield. They put up the serenity shield of anything that makes me, you know, unhappy. I think it's the sort of downside of the New Age mindfulness, which I find fascinating. I've studied it, and I think mindfulness is wonderful. But it's this whole sort of that corrosive pacifism that says, I don't want to entertain anything that isn't positive. And that whole word positive and negative has taken on this insane mentality that says, I don't want to think about anything that doesn't bring me joy. And I'm like, I get you, but that's then taking all away the it's like turning critical thinking, which can be a dangerous thing, you know, but I don't mean it in the academic sense. I mean that we think about things in a very depthful way, getting to the roots of things, not just doing the logical analysis, but getting in and seeing really what's going on, and that it can be a terribly shattering to our psychology, which I think it should be. You know, it's our psychology is what keeps us entrenched in this kind of dark age madness that just says, well, you be you, I'll get along to get along, and, you know, to each is their own. Well, what if their own is destroying the living world where it's not going to be inhabitable for anybody? You know, it's like,
right,
we're supposed to just go along with it, you know, or it's like the whole, you know, the sex industry. It's just like, well, you know, they don't have to be there. And you're just like, you know, you're like, yeah, you know, but it's, why is it even there? Why is it an option? You know, if nobody's asking, because there's a demand by civilization for it. So we're normalize the abuse of human beings for, you know, the exploitation, because that's the relationship we have in commerce. And you're like, well, maybe that should be examined in a far more depthful way, as opposed to just following it and then facilitating greater and greater exploitation at every turn, as opposed to that.
Right.
Sort
it's
of
when
like,
you
oh,
look
well,
at the
being...
big picture. It's when you look at the big picture that the small things start to, not the small things, but the separate things start to fall apart.
Absolutely.
On the bright side with my sister. I'm sorry, go on.
Mm-hmm. No, you go
on. On the bread side with my sister, we were planting in the forest, and it was her very first time ever planting in the forest. And normally, like there's a plant demo, so you show someone how to do it. But what we did with her instead was right away we noticed that she had this really strong compassion and empathy with the plant. She was really, all of her senses were tuned into it, and she was connecting with the plant that she was going to put in the ground. And there came this moment when it became more of an intuitive thing than an instructive thing. So it became a discussion. The whole process of us even having to plant to restore the earth is an unnatural kind of process. It's really sad also, but unfortunately, that's where we're at. So, but besides that, she was feeling what the plant needed, and we talked about it, the different parts of the plant, what it needed to make this place its new home. And so she was able to kind of intuitively figure out the methods for giving this plant what it needed to help it thrive in this new place. And it was so amazing. So at the same time, she had this depression response to bringing her out of her bubble a bit. She also had this introduction to this earth connection. And really, that's an important first step for a lot of people is reconnecting with the earth intuitively, not just like from reading books or getting degrees or whatever, spiritually, feeling it with your heart. And when you get that kind of emotional commitment to the earth, that's what can spark the action that's needed.
Absolutely. I've talked to so many, the rewilders who say that very thing, that to get out, it can be anywhere. That sense of, yes, you might live in a city, that's still the wild, It's not the wild we want, but it's that place where there's everywhere is nature, even though we've killed it off in so many ways. And to get to go and do that, to get to be a part of that, to connect with. I mean, that's the people often ask, well, okay, well, let's say we did dismantle civilization. How would we reconnect with it? And I think that component of being, of that spiritual aspect of it, is there for us. There's nothing stopping us except our own discursive psychology, that logic-based disconnection that just says I have to analyze everything and then I have to only accept the knowledge from what the academics and the patriarchists love to tell us is knowledge, as opposed to just being there in that moment with yourself and it, where you cease to be that separation. And I think the hardest part for a lot of people is to sense that, like you said, that intuitive, it's instinctive. But we don't, that's what I studied philosophy for 20 years. And that's one thing that's completely eradicated from the canon, which is the study of instinct, because it's taught that it's pretty much nothing. All that matters is reason and your senses. And of course, reason is venerated because it's the most abstract and important, and that's where the truth is, and the instinct is completely disregarded, just cast out, terribleized, demonized. The senses are a pale second, like Plato would say. It's just a pale copy of reality, which is pure reason, But it's getting out there. That defeats, to me, that dichotomy. When people can get out, but not everybody can. So people say, well, hey, I live in the inner city. How am I supposed to reconnect with nature? And I'm like, any way you can. It's that whole test about resistance, too. You connect any way you can. It's about seeing that there's that connection, and that's pretty hard to do for some people, and I totally understand that. And that's where they attack back. They attack back with the privileges that we have, that they fire back and they say, oh, it's easy for you to say white man, privileged white man, privileged white person. And it's like, I'm not attacking you though. That's my point. It's saying, I'm not attacking them. It's that, hey, we need to see the forest for the trees, if you will. And if we haven't spent any time with trees, we should spend time with trees. And they're like, that's silly. I'm like, well, have you tried it? Because I got to spend a lot of time with trees in my youth. And as silly as we want to make it sound, it was a very meaningful time to spend time with those trees. You want to know where those trees are now? Dead, destroyed. I got to go back and see that area that I spent a good chunk of my childhood, and it's literally gone. It's not, it's clear cut of the way. It wasn't even a good tree. They just wanted to clear it for development. And I was like, that's of course that's what they did, because it was just there. It didn't serve mm-hmm. their purpose. But I spent years in this little, I'll call it a forest, and it was just destroyed. And that's the, to me is the, that's what we do. And I keep asking myself, you know, why are we following this? And how loud can I scream? You know, where, you know, how confrontational can I be? Where, you know, you know, where I don't want to go and you know, I wouldn't want to hurt your sister's feelings. I wouldn't want to, you know, cause her a disturbance. I don't want anyone to become depressed because of what I have said or what I have done. But at the same time, how could I remain silent? And I understand context. I understand there's a time and a place. But sometimes, even when those contexts aren't there, you still have to throw down, if you will, because that's where we are in our time frame, shall we say. We're out of time. I mean, we're out of time as humanity to not save civilization, because that would be a bad thing, but mm-hmm. but to not just live in our bubble, to not just, hey, I'll take care of me, you take care of you, and, you know, good luck. But it's that by us doing that keeps us divided and keeps them powerful. It's not just about, oh, power for power. That just, we see that doesn't work. But it's about having that capability to resist any way we can. And plant, you know, guerrilla gardening, planting trees, all of those things, everything we can do to resist it. We don't need an ideology or a flag or, you know, an organization. Those are great, helpful, very. But anything we can, and that to me is why, you know, having conversations with people to plant those seeds, you know, of resistance, of awakeness, you know, it's sometimes it's ridiculously dangerous, because you're just like, oh, that person could then take it and, you know, decide to, you know, point the finger and scream, you know, bad guy, you know, and that's what keeps a lot of us, you know, in line, if you will, because we know we're even more in a climate where underminers or resistors are in a very dangerous position, even more so.
Mm-hmm. We're under constant assault. It's, you know, they're locking us up. They're locking us up so quickly, and scrutinizing.
I mean, they've already filled the prisons. They're just going to fill them up some more and probably build some more. And it's that whole, you know, I can't tell somebody how to live. I would never want to be so ridiculously presumptuous or tell somebody what they have to do with, you know, that's the thing, is everybody's life is their own separate context. You know, my context, I have kids, and so if I go off and do something, then my kids are left without a father in a culture that won't support them. So it's, mm-hmm. then it's solely our responsibility, my responsibility, to make sure they have their parent. So they keep us enslaved, keep me enslaved perfectly, by threatening my family. That's how they always get us, just like the mafia. And this is the mafia model anyway, right? It's like, hey, I'm going to make you an offer you can't refuse, you know, so it's you follow. You know, you can talk all you want. That's why they haven't come for me yet, because you're a, you know, threat. You know, once we decide you're a threat, then we'll come. You know, it's like everybody gets their turn, you know, when they feel like it, when the eye of Sauron turns to them, for those who, like the Lord of the Rings trilogy, you know. And I, you know, I, you know, to sort of to take that connection that one has with when they experience that with that nature, that, and you know, that's what I think some really want that promotion. Like some of the people who have organizations that I've talked with or stuff, they don't want to focus on the negative because they think that makes people upset. They want to talk, trying to help people connect with nature, you know. But then I wonder, is like, well, is this just your business? You know, is this just a, you know, a business ploy for them? You know, I don't know. But even if it is, hey, not a bad way to make a living, I guess, better than mine. But it's that whole of, you know, here, come out and do some nature hikes with us, so you'll connect with. But is not our nature hike sort of just playing tourism, where, you know, it's, I don't know. I often,
I see it two different ways. Like, there's such a huge movement now of people reconnecting with nature in a way that is more self-oriented, you know, because it's healing their spirit and things like that. But then there's people who are reconnecting with nature and figuring out, like really sensing and figuring out what Earth needs. So I kind of divide it into two camps. And the ironic thing is that when you are in nature trying to do the work for Earth, that also ends up helping you to, you know, heal some of your spirit. That's not what is for sale. What's for sale is connecting with nature so that you can grow or reconnect, you know, or any of the other psychobabble that's out there.
Yeah. Yeah, I think all of that is good. It's just, does one lead to where we are ready to, you know, challenge things, or does one lead to that passivity that keeps us in that serenity shield, that serenity bubble that says, oh, well, you know, there's nothing I can do, so I'm just going to, you know, try to take care of myself, and, you know, it sucks for, you know, the living world, but I got to, you know, I don't want to die. I'm like, I get you. I get it. But, you know, what is our threshold? You know, Derek Jensen asked that in you know, the Endgame book, is what is your threshold? What is our threshold for where we will rise up, you know, and take on, you know, this, the what's really the root of things, which is society and industrial civilization, the society that puts us in these roles and says you can only live this way, and the society that then creates this patriarchal civilization that's all about total domination, and, you know, and then we can only then think through that discursive term of this fictional problem solving that still lets me, as one person said to me, as long as my bourbon keeps flowing, you know, I'll resist every, as long as that keeps going, I'm still totally anti-civ, but I still got to have my pleasantries. Like, yeah, I get that,
right.
But we may not have that. You know, we may not have that if that pleasantry is at the cost of the living world, and if we're just not going to sit down and start to hash out what's less harmful than something else. It's all interconnected. And what people don't like to hear is we're going to have to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And that just totally, like, what? What is that? What do you mean? And I'm like, yeah, I think we're that far. And nobody wants to hear that. How severe our psychology is, and the outcome of it. That if we don't go deeper and really gut that separation out, if we can, we're going to just flip it and just keep playing power worshiper, which is what we've done for that 10,000 years. And it's not worked out so well for women and children and people who aren't deemed worthy of the whatever madness is the prevalent of the time. But my time is up.
I see, your time is up? All right.
Yeah, keep going. It still records after the time goes.
Okay. I see that it goes back even further than 10,000 years. I see it as being a series of catalysts. And I had this one, I was thinking of how pair bonding started. And so there's this one part I wanted to read to you from this book. Can I do this? So
What's the
I'll
book called?
challenge you. I'll read this section of this book and then you will see if you can tell me the name of the book. I think you'll know it. Cooking need not be a social activity, but a woman needs a man to guard her food, and she needs the community to back him up. A man relies on a woman to feed him and on other men to respect his relationship with her. Without a social network defining, supporting, and enforcing social norms, cooking would lead to chaos.
That's not sex, the dawn of prehistoric origins of modern sexuality, is
So, can you name the book?
it? Well, I think Sex at Dawn was my first shot. There's no, I don't know. I don't know. There's no. Tell me.
Okay. So, it's Catching Fire: How Cooking Made Us Human by Richard Wrangham.
Catching Fire. I don't think I've read that. How Cooking Made Us
Oh,
What?
no wonder you didn't know it. I bet you would have known it if you would have read it. Yeah, so for me, like I see agriculture as being one of the big catalysts, like 10 to 12,000 years ago, but I see catalysts that led up even to that. I see like I think the controlled fire, use of controlled fire was probably a huge catalyst in changing the way we relate to each other and we relate to the earth. So I've been interested in that recently, and that book really speaks to it well.
There's a great it's called Beyond Power by Marilyn French, and she talks about how she goes back to in one of the chapters, and she sees as where we created our first containers. Like the first container to hold something changed our relationship with what it meant to have something, where you didn't have a container, you didn't have a cup, you just drank wherever you were. But then once they figured out, for lack of a better word, figured out, once somebody saw that a container could hold something, that they could then make it mobile because they were nomadic, she talked about how that changed. As well, that was one of those catalysts that started to perhaps multiply something. But I don't know. It's interesting how
Yeah, I wonder if
she
that has
uses.
to do with possession.
Well, I think
You
it
know,
has
when
to
you
come
can
back
have a
to,
thing and hold it.
well, it's that connectivity, that connection to something as it is you, in that sense. We can't think of it in self terms, but in that sense of it being you, not separate from you. And the creation of separation is what I think intrigues me a great deal. That separation of the being from the object, that separation from as Eric Fromm would say, the being to the having, these orientations, he thinks those are the two big ones. That outside of you, where they're in the primitive, like the primitive dimension, you read the book, the primitive dimension is everything is completely connected and there's no you or I, there's just this total connectivity to everything. And that there's a different dimensional reality, as she puts it. And I think that when we inhabit that separation, it's not about origins, it might even about the illusion of time. That time is somehow created consciousness, but not in time, because there is no time, because we know it's a construct. So it's that whole, we get go down the rabbit hole for many people. And
Right.
I think
It reminds
that
me a
in
little
there
bit of
in.
Zerzan with art and language.
But yeah, no, I mean, I think that's the whole point. A lot of them talk about how language had confined human beings to that abstraction of ideas and thought as opposed to the direct experience without filter. That's what a lot of the mystics talk about too, is that once we have language games in place, we're no longer directly experiencing, but living only in representation. And living in representation,
right,
we turn nature into a representation as opposed to it is us and we are it. And so we get lost in that. And that's what she talks about in the second book, with the is basically how we've been basically traumatized into this discursive reality that is not in any way real, you know, and
mm-hmm.
It's fascinating. Both of those books and you know, the other, you know, Zerzan and I've been reading that Feral Revolution just recently, just, you know, they get into that sense of going beyond that, getting to the roots that are, it's not done, you know, it's just very infrequently done because we're also, and that's the job, we're that's what civilization does. It keeps us distracted on just focusing on how I can make myself feel good, how I can get through the day, the stuff I'm supposed to want, how can I become successful on this, you know, psychology that is separate from reality. So then psychologists will even say that we all inhabit our own reality, and then it's that whole, if we're all in our own reality, how are we ever supposed to get along? We're not. That's the point.
That's why we don't.
We're not supposed to get along. Yeah, so then we kill each other for ideas. Oh, you don't like this? You know, you don't like Shania Twain? You're dead. You know, you're like, oh, my God. You know? But to them, that could be the most important thing in the world. And you're like, well, then I guess I better like Shania Twain now because I don't want to die because, you know. I mean, it's as trivial as that in a way. It's like, well, I don't want to not walk in anywhere I want to. I'm like, there's a fence there. And if you walk through that fence, you're dead. You know, you're like, okay, yeah, okay. The border, for example, I live right next to the Mexico border, and it's an ominous, scary place. You know, like there's a lot of guns in there, and they shoot you.
Mm.
Any chance they get. You know, but
it's like Dead Man's Zone.
Yeah, it's like a no man's land. It really feels like that. If you watch the film Sicario, they even present it that way, and it's ominous and scary, the border between Mexico and the United States, and it's a dark place. As
well, pretty soon there'll be a wall, and you won't have to deal with it anymore. You can be in your wall bubble.
I know. That's funny. Is there already is a wall? So is he just going to make it prettier? You know, I guess he's just going to make it longer because there's already walls everywhere on the border. You know,
right.
But it's, I guess they need to get that $26 billion to line their pockets. That's really what it is. Like,
it's great talking with you.
Great talking with you. Let's do it again next week.
All right. Feel free.
All right.
Take care. Peace.
Take care. You have a good night. Hey, good day. Bye-bye.